Time Sheamus.
Call to order the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. Today is the 25th of February, and we have three categories of things to do today. We're going to have a couple of work sessions just to introduce some LCs into the process. We're going to have an informational meeting to get a materials management overview from the DEQ, and then we're going to have a public hearing on two bills relating to materials management. So we're going to start out by opening up a work session for the purpose of introducing a couple of committee measures.
Chair Edwards, I move the following LCs be introduced as committee bills: LC 3533 dated 2/24/15 and LC 3037 dated 2/25/15.
Okay, Senator Olson has moved that LCs 3533 dated 2/24/15 and LC 3037 dated 2/25/15 be introduced as committee bills. Is there any discussion? And to clarify for everybody on the record, voting to introduce these LCs as committee bills in no way constitutes support or opposition for the concepts contained herein. It's just simply to get them into the process. And I, as a chair, am willing to extend that courtesy to anybody. So,
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, extending that courtesy to us.
You're welcome.
So how much time do we have to come up with LCs?
Then? Is there not much time left?
Mr. Chair?
Is there any discussion?
I have the 3037, and the other one was?
Yes.
3533.
Let's see what it says.
Okay, fine.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. Close the work session, and we will now open up an informational meeting. And if the DEQ could come forth, they're going to give us an overview of materials management. And maybe by the time you're done, my wonderful Capital Technology will have rebooted, and I won't be able to follow along. I'm so frustrated.
Good afternoon, Chair Edwards. Sorry about that frustration. members,
I'll try not to take it out on you.
Okay, please. Good afternoon, Chair Edwards, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dick Peterson, Director of the Department of Environmental Quality. With me today is Abby Boderis, and we're pleased to share you with some information about materials management. Happy that we're invited to discuss this ahead of a couple of bills, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but we thought it was great to set a framework for materials management in the state of Oregon. As you all know, Oregon has been a leader and a pioneer in recycling, reuse, and materials management. It's a tradition that we all are very proud of. We're ready to take it to the next level, building on what we've learned and accomplished to address new challenges and seize new opportunity. DEQ has been working hard for several years to develop and implement a materials management vision and framework for action. We've engaged a lot of stakeholders along the way. This is a long-range plan to help identify the highest impacts of materials and actions to reduce them and to ensure that the things made and used in Oregon have the least impactful, most useful life possible. It has great potential to help Oregonians and Oregon businesses significantly reduce waste and toxic pollutants, increase recycling, use safer materials, reduce greenhouse gases, and conserve resources. In partnership with our stakeholders and the legislature, we can continue our leadership in this field. We have proposed two bills related to materials management, Senate Bill 245 and Senate Bill 263, which you'll be hearing later. But since materials management is a new concept for a lot of people, we wanted to give you a little bit of background about what it is and what it means. I'll also tell you about the work of the DEQ program in this area. Simply put, materials are the stuff we use every day. The food we eat, the chairs we're sitting on, the buildings we're in, Everything's stored at home, in our garage or basement, and the stuff we put in our recycled bin or trash can. Materials are important to our economy and to the environment. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, the United States used 57% more materials in 2000 than we did just 25 years earlier. Globally, the rate of increase has been even higher. The production, use, and disposal of materials all contribute to a variety of environmental impacts, including toxic chemicals in our environment and homes. Materials management programs can reduce those toxic chemicals and also help achieve the state's statutory greenhouse gas reduction goals. The materials we're using are also changing. In 1900, 41% of materials used in the United States came from renewable sources. By 1995, only 6% did, which begs the question, is this the way we manage materials sustainably? Materials management is an approach to reduce these impacts. It includes waste management, but takes a much more comprehensive view. It considers the impacts of materials across their full life cycle, from raw material extraction through manufacturing, use, and disposal. Advancements in analytical tools over the last 10 years now allow us to better quantify and understand environmental impacts of materials and products in a much more comprehensive way. We know it is better to look at the big picture than to only focus on one piece, such as disposal. Understanding the full impacts also helps us to prioritize efforts, identify and manage potential trade-offs, and improve decision-making. Statute establishes the solid waste hierarchy, a ranked order of methods for managing solid waste. At the top, the most preferred method is reduce. This method is about preventing waste, not managing it. Next in priority are reuse and then recycling, which seems like they're only about how we manage discarded materials. But the economic value of recycling and most of the environmental benefit is not about keeping stuff out of the landfill. The benefits come from providing materials industry can use to make new products at lower expense and with less pollution. Before I turn it over to Abby, I'd like to give you some context about what we currently do in our materials management program. We permit solid waste disposal sites, including landfills, waste transfer stations, and compost facilities to ensure that the environment is protected. We also monitor and sample groundwater at landfills to detect leakage. We respond to illegal stockpiling and dumping of waste and work with landowners on cleaning up this material. We also administer Oregon's Recycling Opportunity Act, which requires cities and counties to provide households and businesses with recycling options. We administer the Oregon eCycles program for recycling electronics and oversee the statewide paint product stewardship program. We provide and collaborate on research and analysis that is used by partners statewide. This work includes a yearly calculation of statewide and local waste recovery rates, a periodic study to understand what's in the state's garbage, and research projects. Historically, the program provided one-day events across the state where households could drop off hazardous wastes such as pesticides and mercury. We have also provided grants and assistance to build local household hazardous waste collection depots and grants to support local waste prevention, recycling, solid waste, and solid waste planning projects. Finally, we do some work in the area of waste prevention, including a few projects that Abby's going to highlight in just a minute. I can't say enough about how industry and Oregon's have stepped up to this challenge. It's clearly known in this state where partnership when it comes to solid waste, the hierarchy that I mentioned earlier. Working together, we've made great progress in this state. I expect that the spirit of collaboration to continue, and there's still a lot of untapped potential that we have. So Abby, why don't you give some examples and take it from here, please.
Thank you, Chair Edwards and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Abby Badouris, and I'm a legislative analyst with the Department of Environmental Quality, and I've also had the privilege to work on the materials management program at DEQ. The 1991 Oregon Recycling Act requires that the Environmental Quality Commission adopt and update an integrated solid waste management plan. And when it was time to update that plan recently, we used the tools and the knowledge about the limitations of the traditional solid waste framework that Director Peterson described to broaden our approach. An extensive stakeholder process resulted in Oregon's 2050 vision and framework for action. It was adopted by the EQC in 2012, and that new plan consists of two parts. First, it's a vision that Oregonians produce and use materials responsibly, conserving resources, protecting the environment, and living well. It's a vision that engendered support from our stakeholders. It sets a clear picture of 2050 when our production and use of materials is sustainable. The second part of the document, that framework for action, is a list of actions that will help Oregon realize that vision. Since the adoption, we have been implementing that transition to the broader materials management approach. Our emphasis moving forward is on technical assistance, outreach, working with businesses, and research and analysis. And I'd like to just share a few examples with you of what materials management looks like and can look like if we can fully implement the framework. A few years ago, we were asked to meet with one of Oregon's largest bakeries, Dave's Killer Bread. They wanted to do the right thing for the environment when it came to their plastic bread bags, and they used a type of plastic that was designed to degrade in the environment. They also encouraged customers to recycle these bags. We helped the company understand that if these degradable bags were recycled into new products, such as plastic lumber, that those products might subsequently degrade when they were being used. This could threaten the viability of plastics recycling. They either needed to drop the recycling promotion or stop using the degradable plastic. And after understanding the environmental consequences of their choices, they changed their packaging, and they did change it to not using the degradable plastic anymore. Another area ripe with potential involves food waste. The National Institutes of Health estimates that 40% of the food produced in this country never gets eaten. And the economic, social, and environmental impact of that waste is profound. The waste of food and all the resources it takes to make that food can be addressed in many ways. For example, one example is that DEQ can contribute is a pilot project we did with two Intel cafeterias. That pilot project reduced pre-consumer food waste by 47%. DEQ has also worked with groceries and restaurants who often have perishable food that they can't sell. And we help them link with social services agencies by providing grants across the state. With one grant to Access, the Community Action Agency of Jackson County, they purchased refrigerated trucks and equipment to salvage the nutritious food and redistribute it. It keeps the food away from landfills and puts it in the homes and stomachs of families. There are many more opportunities to reduce food waste. And finally, DEQ just completed a study to assess possible ways to increase plastics recycling in Oregon. Plastics are a very high energy material that are still being thrown away in large quantities here. DEQ's study identified 8 projects which could increase plastic recycling by 30,000 tons per year, an increase of 54%. Work on these programs could help lead businesses to business development for plastics recyclers to build capacity needed to process the plastics from these new programs, similar to how when the bottle bill expansion in 2009 led to the construction of a plastics processing facility in Columbia County. Packaging improvements, food waste prevention, plastics recycling are just a few of the great opportunities to help Oregonians and the environment. There are other areas we could be working in as well, such as environmental product footprinting, green building activities, government purchasing, green chemistry, just to name a few. So thank you for the opportunity to present an overview of the materials management program to you today. Director Peterson and I would be happy to take questions.
Questions
of the panel?
Yeah, go ahead.
So
we turn the lights up before I fall asleep. Not speaking to the interest.
He's told me the same thing in my office. I am embarrassed for that.
In these new pictures up there.
But. Yeah. Thank you, Chair Edwards. So
missed a couple pictures.
This looks out to 2050.
Correct.
So what about guys on this panel that I don't think I'm going to see 2050, so maybe I'm not going to care anymore about recycling because I won't even be here. Isn't that kind of a long date? It seems like a long ways away, and maybe harder for people to be looking at a realistic goal, and it might actually put off recycling. Well, we can wait till 2050. Mm-hmm. What was the reason for doing this plan clear out so far?
I'll get a start, and perhaps Abby can finish, Chair Edwards and Senator Thompson. You know, anytime you're a vision setting, you know, a vision, you pick something out in the future.
And are you where still are, be working that program by 2050?
I will be. Okay. I will be. All Senator right. Thompson.
Okay.
I'm sure you'll be asking the same question. But really setting a vision, really, where do we want to go? And so that's the idea behind the 2050. What's the real meat of what we're doing is what do we need to do stepwise to get there so that we're not waiting around, for some date way far into the future to actually do something. So it's really setting where do we want to go, really thinking really thinking broadly and forward in terms of materials management. And so then back up, say, what are the steps we need to take today? There's a lot of infrastructure and a lot of ways we approach using solid waste and managing our garbage, that there's a lot of infrastructure in place. So if we want to get somewhere, how do we take steps to incrementally get to a place where we want to go? But Abby?
It's an excellent answer, Chair Edwards, Senator Thompson. The other reason is when you look so far out, you can look beyond your own self-interest and look at where do we want to be, and we're able to be very broad and big when you think about creating that future, and then think more narrowly in the first early steps. We also wanted to make sure we could make that. What was the big leap? We're not going to make that tomorrow, these big changes. It will take a long time.
Okay. Other questions from the panel? Doesn't look like it, so we're going to move into the public hearings. So we're going to close the informational meeting, and we're going to open up the public hearing on both Senate Bill 245 and Senate Bill 263, and call the department to present the bills, and then we'll open up to public testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Edwards and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Palmer Mason, the legislative coordinator at the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. With me today are Abby Baderas and David Alloway from DEQ, both of whom worked on Senate Bills 245 and 263. You heard Abby and Director Peterson talk a bit about the EQC's adoption of the 2050 vision. And after the EQC adopted that vision, DEQ began working on a small number of high-priority projects that were outlined in that plan. In that process, we identified the need to update goals, modernize Oregon's solid waste laws, and restore and stabilize program funding. With these issues in mind, we went back to our stakeholders to explore solutions. A second materials management work group was formed, and also three subgroups involving over 100 stakeholders meeting with more than 22 meetings over a 14-month period. In that process, in the last year, DEQ also held 35 additional meetings with partners in almost every corner of the state. We took that feedback and recommendation from our partners and developed two proposals, the two bills that you have here today. Senate Bill 245 restores and stabilizes funding for the materials management program. Senate Bill 263 updates state and local goals, and recycling program requirements. Adoption of these bills will give us and our partners a solid foundation to move forward on better materials management. The bills in front of you have dash one amendments. The original bills were developed out of the stakeholder process that I just mentioned. The dash one amendments reflect additional changes that we have heard from stakeholders in more recent conversation. Abby and David will give an overview of each of these bills and will highlight a few changes that have come from discussions that we've had with the stakeholders in recent weeks. To help explain the bills, we have provided the committee with some handouts. There is a combined fact sheet for both bills on OLIS, and we have also passed out today two sets of frequently asked questions, one for each bill. There are still some issues that we are working on, and you'll hear about those issues today. DEQ, and I think we've demonstrated this, is committed to working with stakeholders as needed to reach support. But we do believe both bills are very solid proposals, and we would ask for the committee's support. And with that, I'll turn it over to the others.
Thank you, Palmer. Chair Edwards and members of the committee, my name is David Alloway, and I'm a policy analyst at the Oregon DEQ. I'll provide an overview of Senate Bill 263. Senate Bill 263 updates waste prevention and recycling requirements as well as program goals. Oregon has made steady progress over the years in waste recycling and composting, but many high-value materials are still thrown away. Opportunities to benefit from reducing waste in the first place are often missed, and cities and counties are held to standards that were largely written into law more than 20 years ago. State and local goals are also out of date. Senate Bill 263 would modernize Oregon's recycling laws and update these goals. This is a very long bill with a lot of bold font that looks like new language. Most of it is not actually new. Legislative Council is using this bill to reorganize existing statute, so I'll highlight for you the major changes. First, a little bit of background. The 1983 Recycling Opportunity Act, amended in 1991, was built on the premise that everyone in Oregon should be given the opportunity to recycle. Providing this opportunity is required of all cities with populations over 4,000 and their counties. These cities and counties are required to choose from a menu of 9 recycling program elements. Menu options include weekly curbside recycling, yard debris composting, and business recycling. Cities and counties are required to choose between 3 and 5 of these 9 menu options, depending on their size. Senate Bill 263 would make the following changes. First, it would expand the menu of recycling program elements from 9 to 13, including several options that weren't considered back in 1991. Second, it would increase the number of program elements required of larger communities and those closer to Portland who have better access to markets. Smaller communities and those further from Portland would have no new requirements under this bill, but would have more program elements to choose from, more flexibility. Nearly all the cities and counties affected by this already meet the proposed new requirements. This bill would capture these gains, but require few new programs from these larger communities. Third, the bill would change one of the 9 existing recycling elements. With the move to commingling of recyclable materials, where you put a lot of materials into the same cart, we've seen an increase in contamination, people putting stuff in their recycling carts that doesn't belong there. Senate Bill 263 would require that education and promotion programs address that problem. Senate Bill 263 also fixes a problem faced by tenants in some apartments and strip malls. While the law requires that their landlord be given the opportunity to recycle, the landlord doesn't have to extend the opportunity to the tenants. Many do, but some don't. We propose that all Oregonians should have the opportunity to recycle, regardless of whether they rent or own. Fifth, the bill establishes new waste prevention and reuse program elements. That's the reduce reuse part of the hierarchy and a priority over recycling in state law. And then the bill requires that larger cities and counties choose from that menu of prevention and reuse elements. As with recycling, nearly all of the cities and counties affected by this already meet the proposed new requirements. Senate Bill 263 would capture these gains. The major change in the Dash 1 amendment is in Section 5, where we've based the requirement to implement waste prevention and reuse elements on the size of cities and counties alone and not on their distance from Portland. The other half of Senate Bill 263 also updates state and local goals. Goals signal what's important. In our experience, they're powerful when they help people understand and work together to achieve a shared outcome. In statute, we currently have a number of goals related to materials. There are statewide and local recovery goals to increase recycling, composting, and energy recovery. And there are statewide waste generation goals to reduce the amount of waste produced in the first place. We measure progress towards these goals annually and provide feedback to partners across the state. These goals were last revised in 2001, and many have expired. Modernizing the goals will better measure environmental outcomes and guide state, local, and private industry actions to increase and improve material recovery and prevent waste. So Senate Bill 263 makes the following changes to goals. First, it would update the statewide recovery goal by a modest amount. Second, it would establish statewide recovery goals for food waste, plastic waste, and carpet, three materials that have significant potential for environmental benefits if recovery could be increased. Third, the bill updates local waste shed recovery goals, in every case with new goals that have been requested by the local communities. Most communities chose to propose new goals that are higher than their current goals. This bill would also make their goals voluntary. Fourth, the bill would authorize the Environmental Quality Commission to adopt by rule alternative methods of measuring recovery rates using actual environmental outcomes such as energy savings to help people focus on the materials and the practices that have outsized environmental benefits. Fifth, the bill updates Oregon's statewide waste generation goal, which speaks to the reduce, reuse part of the hierarchy. And finally, the bill eliminates a credit program that was created in 1997. The 2% credit creates a lot of confusion, and parts of it are not very effective. We have maintained the more effective pieces in the new waste prevention and reuse elements that I mentioned earlier. The major changes to goals in the Dash 1 amendment are in Section 9, where we've elaborated on the outcome-based recovery goals at the request of the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. So that's a high-level overview of Senate Bill 263. And Abby will provide an overview of 245. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, and then we'll open it up to questions.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Edwards and members of the committee. For the record, I am Abby Badouris, a legislative analyst with DEQ. Senate Bill 245 would provide adequate and stable funding for the materials management programs, allowing us to implement the high priority programs from the 2050 Vision and Framework for Action that I described earlier. Program revenue comes from tipping and permit fees assessed on tons of solid waste disposed of in and from Oregon. Disposal tonnage and fee revenue has declined sharply since the recession. We cut 8.9 positions and several important services. Only some of the revenue has come back. At the same time, operating costs have increased and fees have not changed since 1994, more than 20 years ago. Without fee increases, DEQ must continue to cut staff and programs. Existing law provides two different types of fees to fund this work: permit fees, which can be changed by rule, and tipping fees, which are capped in statute. This bill primarily addresses the tipping fees. The new revenue resulting from SB 245 would do really three basic things. First, it would avoid further cuts in existing services. Second, it would allow us to restore several priority services that were lost during the recession, including grants to support local waste prevention and recovery projects and the collection of household hazardous wastes. And third, it would fund some of the highest priority new projects identified in the Framework for Action. Senate Bill 245 would increase tipping fees from 81 cents to $1.18. per ton. It would also begin to diversify our funding base by extending fees to several other waste streams that currently don't pay full fees. Those are waste used as landfill cover and waste taken to construction and demolition and tire landfills. That's beginning in 2019. Also in 2019, if waste tonnage continues to fall, it would authorize a small per ton fee on waste sent to compost facilities. It would authorize the Environmental Quality Commission to adjust tipping fees within defined limits that would stabilize our funding in response to inflation or change in disposal tonnage. It would require the DEQ to report to the legislature in 2022 with longer-term funding options. And finally, it would clarify authorized uses of fee revenues for both permit and tipping fees. I mentioned that there are several per ton fees on waste disposal, tipping fees, permit fees, and orphan site fees. SB 245 would authorize an increase in the tipping fee. DEQ, and you can see that here on the slides. DEQ is separately requesting budget approval to increase the permit fee by rule in order to maintain solid waste permit activities in, at current levels. Orphan site fees for the cleanup of hazardous releases from abandoned landfills remains unchanged. Policy option package 132 would authorize DEQ to use this additional fee revenue to fund existing but vacant positions. Most of the changes in the Dash 1 amendment in front of you are to correct drafting errors like David mentioned, but with disposal tonnage up since the original bill was drafted, we have been able to trim a few cents off the proposed fee increases. And in Section 6, we've added a hard cap on the tipping fee adjustment to allow no more than a 3% increase per year from the new fee, the 2016 fee. We've given you a very high-level overview of the two bills, but we're happy to take your questions as well as to meet with any of you after this to help understand it better. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify before you today. Palmer, David, and I would be happy to take your questions.
Okay. Thank you. The questions of the presenters.
I have a question.
Thanks,
Mr. Chair. I wonder if you, whoever would be the appropriate one, could say more about the stakeholder process that was followed in coming up with these proposed changes.
Yes, thank you, Chair Edwards, Senator Dumbrow. There were two stakeholder processes. The first that developed the framework for action and the vision, and then the second frame process that was over the past year. We held seven stakeholder meetings with a selected group of people that met seven times and went over all of the issues. In addition, there were three subgroups to focus on the three specific topics, and those were open meetings. One focused on goals and measures, one focused on recycling, and the other one on funding. And in total, there were about 100 people that participated fairly actively in these meetings, and we would dig into the details of each of those with the subgroups, bring the information back to the work group. They would hear it, and it was a back-and-forth iterative process. And that we shared the draft of the LCs as they were moving forward, as well as once we got the draft bill, we shared that with them. In addition, I'll mention, in order to set the waste shed goals, we went out in different forms and met with 35 different waste sheds to work with them, to inform them about the bills, and also to have them select their new goal.
Great, thank you. And when did those local meetings happen?
That was over this summer, Chair Edwards, Senator Dumbrow.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Abby.
Okay, so you have a question?
I do.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you for your testimony. On the original fact sheet that I was given a couple days ago, there was no mention of the Dash 1 amendment on 245 or 263. Can you explain what the changes were in those two amendments that modified these bills?
Do you want to start with that, Dave?
Yes, Chair Edwards and Vice Chair Olson, thank you. So in 263, the major change is to in Section 9, which discusses the outcome-based recovery rates. The Oregon Refuge Recycling Association requested that we elaborate on how those rates are calculated, so we proposed some language there. And Abby, can you help me out with other changes in the Dash 1 here on? Yeah, just a moment. We want to
take your time.
Here. Oh, Right. There's some organizational changes, Senator Olson, and then one of the other really major changes is in Section 5. The original drafting of the original LC for Section 5 established the waste prevention and reuse element requirements of cities and counties. And as the bill was originally drafted, the criteria for which cities and counties were required to choose those elements were based both on their population and their distance from Portland. Office of Legislative Counsel subsequently advised us that criteria might run afoul of the equal protection clauses in both the U.S. and Oregon constitutions. So we went back to our stakeholders and proposed a change to those criteria so that for the waste prevention and reuse element, the criteria is solely based on population and not distance from Portland. That's a major, major change in the Dash 1. And one of the other changes we had in the original bill, we had 5 of the 30-odd waste sheds that had not yet set their goals. And they have come forward to us in the interim and told us what they wanted for their goals. And then one other change here is that in the original bill, there's a compliance pathway for the Recycling Opportunity Act for cities and counties, where there's two pathways. They can either choose from this list of program elements, the 9 program elements, or they can apply for what's called an alternative program approval. And there are criteria for how that alternative program approval is granted. Based on some feedback we received from the city of Pendleton and a few other communities, we proposed an amendment that relaxes that criteria and makes the alternative pathway less onerous and easier to comply with.
And on 245, I'm sorry.
Chair Edwards, Vice Chair Olson, this most significant change was to add a cap to the fee adjuster to limit it to 3% per year. That was requested by stakeholders to provide some certainty there, as well as we took, I believe it was 2 cents off the tip fee, so 2 cents lower. Based on adjustment, we were able to look at the tonnage. We get quarterly reports, and so we're able to continue our trending and lower that fee number.
So the fee number up there is incorrect?
This is correct. We anticipated it, so it was correct in the fact sheet, but it was corrected in the bill through the amendment.
Okay.
Yeah, please.
You mentioned in the original fact sheet that I was given, I believe it was probably either first of this week or end of last week. These amendments came about pretty quick. Did you not vet these bills out prior to presenting them? I mean, the stakeholders obviously had concerns, and within a few days, these concerns had been amended. Were these bills not out earlier to the stakeholders?
Chair Edwards, Vice Chair Olson, actually, when we got the bills back in November, I believe it was,
October.
Or October, when we got them out of Ledge Council, we shared those versions with our stakeholders, and we began drafting these amendments. We shared marked up versions which is what we ended up submitting to Ledge Council for the amendment, and we were working throughout since October through last week to adjust, massage the language to gain broader support. So it's been a very long and involved process.
Yeah, follow up?
Yeah, please.
Well, it concerns me that you come in and you present a fact sheet to me that in fact is not a fact sheet. It's not factual. It doesn't tell exactly what the bill is going to do. It's an overview of what you've been working on from October till whenever, or November till whenever, and suddenly at the last moment, which is yesterday on 245 and today on 263, or yesterday on 263 also, we get amendments. And so it kind of concerns me when you come in and you present and you talk to me about things, and what's on here is not really what the bill is. It's not all there. It's not factual.
Mr. Chair, can I get clarification? What are we talking about? Because I'm lost as to what you're referring to. I'm looking at what I have. And the dates you're referring to, Senator Olson, are not on the same pages that I have. So could you make the record a little more clear so we know what your concern is?
Well, yes, okay. This was last, this right here on this page right here that I have in my hand was last updated 2/9/15. This amendment comes in 224-15, so this fact sheet is not accurate to what this is.
Today is the first public hearing, so.
Pardon?
We're not working it today.
I understand it. I'm just trying to make it clear the fact that when you come in with a fact sheet, it's not actually what you're submitting to the dais on the day that's coming in. It's not accurate.
Mr. Chair, the fact sheet that's on the dais is dated 225.
Well,
this one is 223.
But the one that was presented to me is 29.
I got one 127. I mean, it has the same numbers that I see up there.
So maybe.
And let me, if I could just say, Mr. Chair,
then committee staff has something to say.
Okay, just back when I was still the chair of this committee, I knew that DEQ was working on this issue on potential amendments, but they wanted to make the outreach as comprehensive as possible. And I assume that's what took this much time.
Yeah, Beth.
Chair Edwards and Senator Olson and committee members, just so everyone knows, there was an additional fact sheet that was provided ahead of time that is on OLIS, I think is what Senator Olson is referring to, that is different, that was a group on both of the measures, and these are individual to the measures. So there's a third fact sheet available on OLIS, which is this one.
I understand.
And Chair Edwards, Vice Chair Olson, let me just be real clear for the record. Senator Olson, I hope you understand, it would definitely not be our intent to give you incorrect information or provide you with something that wouldn't help you understand these bills. And, you know, if we need to talk about what these bills do in more detail, we are certainly happy to do that. There has been an extensive effort by DEQ to try to reach out to stakeholders, and that has occurred up until very recently. So perhaps in talking to you and talking to the stakeholders, our wires may have been crossed. I'm not sure of that, but there is definitely no intent to try to deceive or provide you with incorrect information. I hope you understand that, and we would certainly be willing to talk to you more about it.
The point is that the stakeholders, the people that have to deal with this, are getting this information at a very late date, especially in an amendment, and it would be fair to them to be able to look and advise, and I could call them and talk to them. I actually called LC to find out what the changes were. They never got back to me. So it makes it difficult for me to process rate increases that are pretty substantial when the bill is immediately changed prior to committee, a day before committee. And the stakeholders that are out there, I have to try to contact and talk and find out what their input is. That's what I'm trying to get at, is the fact that, you know, I go out there and I say, this is what they told me, and then we come back and it's not quite the same. It's been modified. And we can do that. I know that, Floyd. We can do that.
Okay, I'm going to press pause right here for a second. We're, because I don't want to all out argument between members of this committee. This is a public hearing. You've made your point, Senator Olson.
I'm done.
DEQ hears you loud and clear. Senator Prezonsky, do you have any clarifying information that's not going to blow this up into an all-out brawl?
I don't know if it's going to blow it up or not, but okay. I'm looking over Senator Olson's shoulder looking at the chart, and I'm assuming it's the numbers on the chart. That's what we're focused on, at least I thought we were. If we're not, if it's something else in the text, I'd like to know what that is, because when I look at the chart that I have for 127.15 and what's up there on the board right now, it's the same numbers, just the same thing that Olson has in his. So I'm trying to figure out what the difference has been in the bait and switch or whatever he's claiming.
So I'm going to ask you folks, is what is up there that we're looking at right now at the first public hearing, that what's represented in the dash ones? And then I have some questions about them.
Chair Edwards, yes, that is accurate to the dash one.
Okay. So my follow-up question is, well, wait, is this about?
Yeah, it's about this. So what has changed that's up there that Senator Olson has now left the room over, that we have some clarification? Because I'm looking again, what you gave me this morning is last date updated January 27th to 15th. And so I've just heard from a colleague that he says something has changed in the last 2 days. I see the numbers here. I look at the numbers that are back in January. They're the same numbers. So I'm trying to figure out what the disconnect is, if there is a disconnect.
from your perception, is there a disconnect or not?
Chair Edwards, Senator Przanski, we were anticipating these amendments, and so we put the on the fact sheet what we understood the amendment would look like. So that is, it is what is on the screen and what you have on the fact sheet and what is in the amendment are all the same to my knowledge.
Does that satisfy you?
It satisfies me. I'm still trying to figure out what the disconnect is for Senator Olson, because it doesn't seem like we have testimony now that what's on the board is what is in the amendment. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And what I have, which dates back a month ago or 3 weeks ago, yeah, is the same numbers.
Senator,
so I'm trying to figure out what he got that we
I'm
didn't
moving
get.
Past this issue now, and so let's just keep moving on, okay? Well, I mean, yeah, so, I understand what you're saying.
So, Mr. Chair, here's the point is I have frustration sitting here having an agency come before us that gets grilled over something that we ask what's the concern. We never get to the bottom of it. We just have someone walk out of the room. And now I'm trying to figure out what's going on here, because I heard this presentation this morning. I'm looking at it here. I'm looking at this. I don't see anything different.
Okay. So,
I think you had some questions.
I do actually have some questions about the fees. Okay. So what I am wondering, and I mean no disrespect to any members of the committee or their frustrations either with one another or with the department, I just want to keep this hearing moving. The tipping fees that are proposed here, so we've got an increase in the actual fee, and is and then The adjuster is new as well. Okay. And then, so could you walk through the elements, both the minimums and the maximums on that adjuster? Because that's new. And then I'd also like you to address, it says that there is, and then it addresses composting as well, in section 6 of 245. Dash ones.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Edwards. currently, the commission has the authority to adjust the permit fee as necessary to meet the funding, the revenue needs of the program as defined by the legislature. So what this bill does in Section 6 is it extends that authority to also allow the commission to adjust the tipping fee, but with some additional bounds and limitations. Those bounds and limitations are described in Section 6 of both the original bill and the Dash 1 amendment. So if I could direct you to page 8 of the Dash 1 amendment in Section 6, I can walk you through this. In Section 6, a line, it begins in line 13, mm-hmm, on page 8. For the biennium beginning July 1st, the commission may, A, proportionally adjust the fees to meet the revenue needs consistent with the budget authorized by the Legislative Assembly. So this says if, for example, disposal tonnage has gone down and the legislature has established our revenue needs of X, and the fees are not sufficient to provide that revenue, then the commission could raise the fees, but only to the point where it would generate enough revenue to meet the legislatively approved budget. The commission would not have the authority to go out and collect more money, which the department would not have the authority to spend. Alternatively, B, the commission could simply adjust for inflation based on the Western Region Consumer Price Index for all urban consumers. Those are the two different fee adjustment pathways for the tipping fee, but there are some constraints placed on that, and those begin at the bottom of page 8. If the fee increase or decrease, because there could be a fee decrease here, and let me talk about that for just a moment. If disposal tonnage comes back with a roar, and we've got millions more tons of waste coming into the landfills, we would have more revenue than we could spend. Currently, the commission could not adjust the tipping fee downward. With this mechanism in place in the bill, the commission would have the authority to adjust the tipping fee downward. So in either case, if the tipping fee goes up or the tipping fee goes down, Sub A on the bottom of page 8 prohibits what we call de minimis fee adjustments of less than 2%, because there is an administrative burden to both us and the local governments anytime they have to process a fee change. And then at the top of page 9, small b, the fee is capped so that it can be no more than the base fee of $1.18 per ton established in statute increased by no more than 3% per year from 2016. So that places a hard cap on it. And then finally, the commission is restricted. They can only do one fee adjustment once per biennium. And then, Chair Edwards, you also asked about the compost fee.
Before we get into that, okay, so just to make sure I understand well, so the bill makes this one-time adjustment because mm-hmm. it's all in statute currently, mm-hmm. and you can't do that by rule currently, then gives you permission to adjust either by CPI mm-hmm. or to meet the legislatively approved budget for the agency for that program, with the provisos, the sideboards, that the adjustments cannot be more than a minimum of 2% before you can make any increase or decrease, so that you're not having to go through that process too often. And then for a total cap of a 3% increase per annually.
Per biennium.
Per year. Biennium.
No, it's per year.
It's per year. Excuse me. Okay. It's per year.
3%.
And Chair Edwards, that 3% is calculated back to 2016. So, for example, if there are no fee increases through 2021, then the commission could look back to 2016 and say the fee in 2016 was $1.18 per ton. We increase that 3% per year up to 2021, and that provides, that's the cap. The commission could not raise the fee any higher than that. And
on an annual basis, so even if it's X number of years out, it says I believe it says annually, does it not? Adjusted annually on July by a 3% increase in the maximum fee. Or am I not reading that right or understanding that correctly, which is completely possible?
The intent here, and we just got this language from, excuse me, Chair Edwards, from Legislative Council yesterday, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
The intent here is that fees cannot be adjusted more than once every 2 years. We could go many years without ever adjusting fees. When it comes time to adjust the fee, there will be a cap that is calculated, mm-hmm. and the calculation uses an annual increase of 3% per year from 2016 to the year of the rate, to the year of the fee change.
Okay. I think I got it.
Okay.
Yeah, Senator.
Thank you. And that's the same formula that's currently being used with the permit fees? Or is it similar? I'm trying to get the structure just to see if we got continuity, because I can understand the opponents to the rate increase would have an issue if we're now bringing in, and if it is a different structure, what is the difference and why would we have something that's different as to the accelerator or cost of living type?
So, Senator Przanski, these sideboards that are described in this bill do not apply to the permit fee. The permit fee does not have these sideboards. The commission has the authority to set the permit fee at the level necessary to fund the program, and the commission has never utilized that authority, because until recently it has not needed to.
So, and a follow-up?
Yeah.
So basically what I'm hearing as a, let's say, safeguard, maybe through negotiations and discussions from what you've heard from others, for the tipping fee, you've put sideboards on there to limit where it cannot be accelerated without having this cap or some other means of coming back either to this body or somehow through, I guess you couldn't do it through rulemaking, you'd have to come back here.
Yeah, Chair Edwards, Senator Przanski, that's right.
Okay.
I think in our mind, the tipping fee, you know, this per ton amount on the waste that gets disposed of,
more broadly affects Oregonians, and that's why it made sense probably in the original legislation that that was in statute, and we're trying to allow a mechanism for it to keep up with those changes in tonnages and changes in inflation and not have to sort of return to the legislature on a regular basis, but with some real hard parameters and caps about how we can do that. And then the permit fee, we work regularly with the industry and interested parties, and that is something we can do through rule. It made more sense to leave that as it is.
So, Mr. Chair, if I can follow up. So I understand the rulemaking. Everyone seems to be okay with that as to how it's worked, all that. What I heard this morning was the tipping fee that's reflected on the chart for 1994 to 2015 at 81 cents per ton is not changed since, for 21 years. If I remember correctly, it was 1994. So we're now looking at increasing 37 cents in 21 years. That's what we're proposed to do. Is that correct? Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification. And I'm just I'm thinking through this from, I guess I've been wearing a Ways and Means hat for a while, so just thinking through both successes that we've had doing things like this in other departments, like the Department of Agriculture, and stakeholders seem, and some of those programs seem to be pretty satisfied with how things go, and then challenges that we've had in departments like the Department of Energy, where it's driven by volume up and down, and then there's wilder swings in the actual fee amount, and so that's different than this and probably fluctuates more, and you have some tighter caps in here, so I'm just processing this, and I appreciate your willingness to dig in. So, and now the compost issue.
Compost fee. Thank you, Chair Edwards. So the compost fee is described on page 6 of the Dash 1 amendment. And if I could provide a little bit of background on this, the stakeholder work group that Abby talked about spent a lot of time impressing upon DEQ the need to diversify our funding base, to not be solely tied to garbage, to the garbage going to the landfill. So the group discussed a number of different ways of potentially diversifying the funding base, and this was one proposal that came out of a long sort of series of discussions and compromises with the stakeholders. The way this works, and it begins on line 9, is that from 2014 to 2016, we would calculate the 3-year average for waste disposal that goes to landfill and incineration, and that becomes a baseline. And then if for beginning in 2017 and going on into the future, if for 2 years in a row the waste going to disposal is 90% or less below this base period, so if disposal tonnage is declining and stays suppressed below this base period, then the commission is authorized, not required, but authorized to impose a fee on feedstocks that go to compost facilities, because certainly one of the reasons why we're losing revenue on the disposal side is we're seeing more composting, which is something we want. The fee is capped. Currently, there is a 81-cent fee on waste sent to landfill that is not charged on composting. And the intent, the way this is structured, is to maintain at least that 81-cent differential. So as the tipping fee is raised by 37 cents here, then the compost fee could be no more than 37 cents. The goal is to maintain the gap between composting and landfilling, but diversify the funding base and help reduce some of the volatility in our program.
So simple. Any other questions?
It helps when you have people talk to us about this stuff, right?
Yeah, no, it does, and I appreciate it. Okay, so no other questions?
No.
Okay, I have no other questions, so thank you for presenting on the bills, and we're going to go to some more public testimony. So we're going to start off with I'm going to call you up in sets of three, not because you've signed up together, but because I just want to be able to keep this moving along. So We're going to just start with, okay, Mark, I'm not sure. Yes.
That's the one.
You drew the lucky ticket because you came from more than 100 miles away. And then Rick Winterhalter and Babe O'Sullivan. Please, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Edwards and committee. I think you've picked a group of people who already know each other, so we're not too nervous being up here. I'm actually here today testifying for the Association of Oregon Counties.
And your name for the record.
And my name is Mark Salins. I currently chair the AOC Solid Waste Subcommittee. I'm also the Lincoln County Solid Waste District Program Manager in my home county. In addition to the more formal testimony that I'll get to in a moment, and I'm happy to see you've received a copy of that from Mark Nystrom of AOC staff, I'd like to start by saying that the AOC Solid Waste Committee itself has been extremely involved with the staff and Department of Environmental Quality throughout this entire process, beginning over a year ago at this point. We spent time with them reviewing both the legislative concepts as well as the Senate bills that are before you today. And several of our members also served on the various DEQ work groups that you heard about earlier. We also invited and were happy to have DEQ actually meet with us face-to-face at two of our meetings. For me, this has been pretty much my life for about the past year, because not only have I operated at the state association level working with DEQ, but then back in my own home county, like many counties, we have a solid waste advisory committee, and they have been involved all along the way as well. One last statement I'd like to make is, in my previous career, I actually spent 32 years working with another large state agency who's got some problems right now, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. But the reason that I point that out is I recognize when an agency is making a major, major effort to basically, through major legislative changes, bring themselves back into position with some of their critical mission elements. And in my opinion, I think DEQ staff has done a highly professional, adaptive, and comprehensive job preparing the Senate bills before you today. I purposely put the word adaptive in there because I cannot think of a time, even in my own process, where a staff has worked so hard to accommodate local concerns right up until the last minute. And I would say that if there is some confusion, that's largely because how hard DEQ staff has reached out to accommodate literally every individual stakeholder involved. Mark Nystrom, AOC policy staff, would have loved to have been here, but he's currently in the air making his way back from Washington, D.C. They had the National Association of Counties this last week. DEQ's legislative proposals, Senate Bill 245 and 263, pertain to necessary materials management modifications and stable funding sources. Both of these proposals stem from an intensive convenings of the material management work groups, which you've heard plenty about today. Materials management, as you're beginning to gather, is much more complicated than it may seem on the surface. And I, for one, who works inside a county, you can imagine how around the state we're constantly striving to understand the complexities, communicate these to our citizens, and prioritize with sometimes inadequate funding sources to reduce the potential hazards, both directly on human beings if we're talking hazardous waste, and natural resource impacts. Since you do have a copy of the formal testimony, I'm just going to quickly highlight some of the benefits. We'll paraphrase them to save time. Some of the benefits that AOC highlighted were fewer toxic chemicals in products and waste associated with health and environmental benefits will result from the adoption of these Senate bills. Financial, technical, and programmatic assistance to improve upon existing local hazardous household waste management services. That's a big deal, particularly to smaller rural counties who can't afford that. Maintaining current level of service for complaint response involving illegal disposal. Technical and financial assistance to help businesses reduce the environmental impacts of materials they produce and those they purchase, financial and programmatic assistance to help social service agencies capture and divert perishables, but edible food away from the landfill, financial and programmatic assistance on other waste prevention programs, technical support and improvement for expanded waste recycling and composting programs, some examples, shelf-ready projects that can be designed for cities, counties, or other partners to basically be able to implement without having to do the work of designing those, improvement in the environmental performance of products, broad public health, climate, resource, and other benefits, better and more responsive measurements of outcomes. That's something that's really important to me. I've been an environmental scientist my entire career. And finally, statewide capacity building in several areas, including environmental analysis and of materials. And to wrap up, AOC would like to commend DEQ and their outreach to counties. DEQ staff responded promptly and officially to each county's concerns. Well, there are a few counties that are still raising some specific concerns about the legislation. You've heard about some of those recently. AOC and DEQ have committed to work together to find reasonable solutions to these local problems. Although I'm here representing Mark Nystrom today, please, if you have any additional questions regarding AOC's testimony, feel free to call him as soon as he lands in Portland. In all seriousness, I talked to him, and the man is going to need some rest.
Thank you. Either of you?
Make sure that this thing on. Chair Edwards, committee members, my name is Rick Winterhalter, and I'm here as the immediate past chair of the Association of Oregon Recyclers. Like Mark, I'm pitch hitting for our current chair, Allie Briggs Unger, who is stuck in icy Dallas, Texas, with her employer, Portland-based Resource Recycling, putting together the nation's only plastics recycling conference that is attended by worldwide leaders. These bills before you today will continue to secure Oregon's role as a leader in materials management that began with the iconic bottle bill in the early 70s, the Recycling Opportunity Act in the early 80s, and the enhancements to each in the early 90s and late aughts. And I'm here to express AOR's support for Senate Bills 245 and 263 in their Dash 1 forms. And also I'd share with you that, you know, as Mark has said, we've been, you know, we've shared a seat at the table of the stakeholders, and I know up until, you know, the last minute, even the email chains have been very long, and our members have been included, and as all the stakeholders as well. And the breadth of the membership that is AOR, collectors, processors, end users, local governments, and individuals dedicated to extracting value from our discards, want you to be aware that these bills are laying the foundation for achieving the 2050 vision for materials management that was described earlier by the DEQ. 18 months ago, that diverse group of stakeholders was assembled to review the agency draft of these bills and began the task of bringing the bills you see before you today. And we are determined to bring you bills that would be the foundation for this 2050 vision and would also be something that AOR's diverse membership could come before you and support, not an easy chore. And I can safely say that these are not the bills that we began with, and instead are bills created from the process of information sharing and compromise. These bills represent a continuation of solid waste management policies that Oregonians have come to expect. Senate Bill 263 modernizes decades-old recycling and waste prevention statutes and goals. The proposal expands program options, updates local and statewide material recovery goals. And as has been mentioned, the DEQ held numerous public meetings across the state to develop the aspirational goal and program elements tailored to the communities they affect. Senate Bill 245, in its Dash 1 form, provides the first opportunity in over 20 years for the DEQ to update their dedicated funding for recycling and waste prevention programs. Restored funding will reinvigorate technical assistance to our members throughout the state, restore grant programs intended primarily for smaller rural communities, and reinstate household hazardous waste collection events in those cities and counties with the pent-up demand. The association feels so strongly about this 2050 vision that after over 30 years, the board has voted to change our mission to reflect the vision. Our members will continue to provide Oregonians with the opportunity to return their discards to the stream of commerce while providing jobs and creating business opportunities. The AOR urges each of you to pass this bill out of the committee and support them all the way through to the final vote. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Edwards and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Babe O'Sullivan. I'm the sustainability liaison for the City of Eugene. It's a pleasure to be here today as this legislative package comes before you. On behalf of the City of Eugene, I'm submitting a letter from our Mayor Kitty Piercy, but I'd like to speak to our support for both bills. Along with my colleague Ethan Nelson, I served on one of the stakeholder groups that helped the Department of Environmental Quality develop the groundbreaking 2050 vision and framework for action. It's gratifying to see the results of that work in these two bills, SB 245 and 263, which together will bring a much-needed update to the state's recovery and waste generation goals and provide the resources needed to reach them. This package and the strategy it reflects is grounded in a materials management approach, which you've heard about today, that is looking at all the impacts of the materials we consume over their lifetime, not just at the time we throw them away. Through this lens, we know that not all wastes are created equal, and the strategy contained in this legislative package will target those that have the greatest environmental impact, such as food, plastic, and carpet. It will also eliminate the outdated and ambiguous 2% recycling credits in favor of more robust and definitive requirements for waste shed recovery programs. We're pleased to see that it will also restore the local grant program to assist local governments and other partners in developing creative solutions to materials management. We look forward to working with DEQ to find and test those innovations. These efforts by DEQ align with and advance many of our goals in the City of Eugene. We continue to develop and launch new material recovery programs, like our Love Food Not Waste program for commercial food waste composting. Sustainable materials management is also a cornerstone of our climate action planning. Eugene recently enacted the Climate Recovery Ordinance, which codifies our climate action goals for the community and for our city operations. We will have to curb the greenhouse gas emissions associated with the production and consumption of goods and food if we are to meet the aggressive targets in this ordinance. Sustainable materials management will be critical to our success at the local, state, and national level. Oregon's strategy is on the innovative edge in expanding beyond traditional waste management practices to address the upstream impacts of our material use. This work is the leading edge for states and local governments. My sustainability colleagues in cities across the country are drawing on the visionary work of DEQ to take a more holistic approach to waste reduction and material recovery. We're lucky to have this thought leadership in our home state. Let's give DEQ the tools they need to carry this important work forward. On behalf of the City of Eugene, I urge you to support SB 245 and 263. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of the panelists? Don't see any. Thank you each for being here. Next, we're going to go to, we've got two more panels, two-person panels, Megan Ponder and Tracy Rutten.
Thank you, Chair Edwards, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Megan Ponder, and I'm here representing the City of Portland. I've also submitted written testimony for the record. Oregon is recognized as a national leader in solid waste management and resource conservation through recycling. We have made significant progress in material recovery, yet many opportunities to improve remain. Senate Bill 263 and Senate Bill 245 represent an important next step in Oregon's materials management efforts. Senate Bill 263 and Senate Bill 245 are the products of an inclusive and thorough multi-year stakeholder process. The City of Portland participated in more than 20 workgroup and subgroup meetings, and the resulting legislative proposals in front of you today accurately reflect the process. To just address the Dash One amendments here, these amendments are based on stakeholder input and feedback. DEQ has kept stakeholders informed of the proposed changes, and the City of Portland supports the amendments presented. Senate Bill 263 updates decades-old recycling and waste prevention statutes and goals. The City of Portland is offering more services and programs than currently required by law. Senate Bill 263 increases requirements for Portland and more appropriately reflect the existing landscape of local efforts. DEQ recognizes that the greatest potential for increasing material recovery lies in the urban communities of the Willamette Valley, and is proposing that the state's three largest waste sheds, Metro, Lane, and Marion, do more to increase recovery than other parts of the state. The City of Portland supports the Metro 2025 recovery goal of 64%. Senate Bill 245 adjusts tipping fees assessed on tons of solid waste disposed in Oregon. These fees represent a very small portion of overall garbage rates and have not been adjusted for more than 20 years. The City of Portland supports the proposed increase of solid waste tipping fees and the increase of permit fees by rule. These fee adjustments will stabilize DEQ staff and programs and will provide benefits to local governments through restored and enhanced programs and grants. The modernization of Oregon's recycling and waste prevention statutes and the adjustment of tipping and permit fees will provide a strong foundation for the implementation of the DEQ's Materials Management in Oregon 2050 Vision and Framework for Action. This work represents an important update in resource conservation, and the City of Portland supports DEQ in its effort to address environmental impacts across the full life cycle of materials and products. The City of Portland strongly endorses Senate Bills 263 and 245 and urges your support.
Thank you.
Tracy. Chair Edwards, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tracy Rutten with the League of Oregon Cities, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on Senate Bill 245 and 263. The League has been involved throughout the DEQ-led process, and I want to take a moment to thank the department for a very thorough process. And for their outreach to stakeholders, including the League. They have been very willing to hear the concerns and feedback that we have shared with them, which I have greatly appreciated. They've also had many one-on-one discussions with individual cities who have had questions or expressed concerns over the proposed measures. As it relates specifically to Senate Bill 245 and the -1 amendment, the League recognizes the need for DEQ to identify and implement a long-term funding solution for the materials management program. With no general fund revenue, we recognize that enhanced revenue will be generated through fee increases, which have not, some of those which have not been increased since 1994. The relationship between the state, local governments, and private solid waste management companies is critical. Many aspects of the Vision 2050 are reliant upon effective coordination and cooperation at the local level. The League is supportive of ensuring adequate staffing at the department to administer the program and to be able to serve as a resource for sustainable product management practices at the local level. In addition, we support efforts to enhance funding for local collection events, mercury reduction programs, household hazardous waste collection, and education at the community level. And as to the impact of rates, as we were curious kind of going into this discussion, there has been some discussion and analysis of the rate impact. While we don't have data for all cities that, across the state, for instance, one city that we did take a look at was the City of Ashland, and what the rate impact would look like for them. And what they calculated was about 4 to 6 cents per household per month as their rate impact. So we have a better idea then of sort of what that looks like as we talk with our citizens. Undoubtedly, these two bills will impact cities across the state. However, that impact varies based on the size of city, where they're located, and partnerships that they may have created with other governments or entities for the provision of solid waste and recycling services. We have a number of cities that have expressed their enthusiastic support, as you've just heard from Portland. While we have some cities that remain concerned over potential impacts and their ability to implement alternative plans, and how the elimination of the 2% credits may impact some of their partnerships and work that they have done and are quite proud of. I know that DEQ has had conversations with a lot of these cities that have expressed concerns, and it is my hope that those conversations will continue and hopefully lead to some alleviation of the concerns as we go through this process. There's one specific issue that I did want to mention for the record today, and that is we would like to see the opportunity for cities to be more involved in the process of determining recovery goals for their waste sheds. We understand that the goals are aspirational, but there are some concerns, and there have been some folks that are nervous that alternative plans that they have approved through DEQ could be impacted if they are not able to meet the goals that were adopted. To some degree, this is addressed in Senate Bill 263 in the -1 amendments on page 5, line 11, which allows for a comparison to the lesser of the recovery goal for the waste shed or the recovery levels of that are comparable to similar communities. However, should a waste shed adopt a goal that's simply unattainable, it could be far more challenging for those communities within the waste shed who will need to work with DEQ to demonstrate and justify their actual recovery rates, which may be lower than the goal that was established for them. Further, there is not a consistent process by which these goals are adopted at the waste shed level. In the latest update process, some cities were asked to participate. However, in some areas of the state, cities were not asked to participate in that, and there was not notification given. We certainly don't want to ask for mandatory participation by any means or for any kind of a formal sign-off for those cities, but what we would like to see is that there is a notification to the city so that they are allowed the opportunity to ask questions and to participate as they see fit. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Senator Przosky.
I have a question. Tracy, I was looking for the testimony. I didn't see it, so I'm just going based on what I heard. I think I heard you say Ashland was looking at what the tipping fee differential is going to be as to their residents. Is that correct?
That, Chair Edwards, Senator Przosky, that is correct. So that was the per household per month rate increase that they, considering all things.
So basically, I just want to get this in my mind because what I understand is the increase request is 37 cents from what it currently is, and I understand that's over 2 years or 21 years. That comes out to a little less than 2 cents per year increase. So on a per ton of what a consumer or family would be, disposing of, not recycling, is what they figure or calculate that 4 or 5 cents per month. Is that correct?
Chair Edwards, Senator Przosky, that is my understanding.
Okay.
I will look to DEQ for nodding heads, and they are nodding, so yes.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
And then, so to follow up, League of Cities is supportive, but there are some individual cities who have some reservations.
Chair Edwards,
fair characterization.
That is a fair characterization. We've been, like I said, extensively involved throughout the process. I think we are pretty close in a lot of ways, and I think that a lot of the conversations I think that have occurred are getting us even closer. And I think it's just folks who are more nervous about the what could be as opposed to what is maybe in the bills.
So is there any consistency among the cities that are concerned? I mean, geographical consistency. Are they all in Frontier Oregon, or are they all in the Willamette Valley, or are they all on the coast? Or, I mean, is there, are they all little towns, big cities?
They're all in Oregon,
I understand that.
Chair Edwards, it really has been, the concerns have come from a handful of cities, really, and for the most part, the feedback that we've received from larger cities that have a lot of staff, I think, dedicated to this issue area has been more supportive, I think. So it would be fair to characterize that some cities that might be smaller had some concerns. But there's really not been consistency. We have emailed and contacted out with those cities, especially who have to adopt additional program elements, to make sure they're aware of that. And I've received very little feedback, to be honest. So they're not seeming to be too alarmed, aside from a few folks that have some very specific concerns.
I have one other follow-up. Yeah. And Tracy, I guess based on what the chair has asked, it sounded to me also in your testimony that really the more the concern that seemed to be more unified by some of the cities is with Senate Bill 263, ensuring that there's the rulemaking, something some means of notifying what the visions might be and adjustments by making certain there's like a listserv that everyone understands. DEQ's in the process of doing this. Here's what we're thinking. If you want to participate, here's how you do it.
Chair Edwards, Senator Przanski, that's exactly right.
Okay.
We'd like to see very just basic notification if somebody's adjusting a goal, because it does have an impact down to the local level.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you both. And looks like the last two people that have signed up that haven't testified yet are Willie Tiffany and Christy Split. Oh, and Randy Tucker. Sorry, Randy. Almost missed you there. Come on up as well.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, I'm here today, Christy Split, representing actually myself. The Oregon League of Conservation Voters and members of the Oregon Conservation Network certainly support Senate Bills 245 and 263. But I wanted to talk to you as a resident of Salem, Oregon today, and a resident of Salem, Oregon, who sat on the work group for DEQ in putting together these two bills. It was an honor to be asked, and I said at the time to Palmer Mason, who did the asking, I'm no expert on these issues, and he said, that's exactly why we want you at the table. So I just wanted to share a little bit about how I came to understand this program and why I am a big supporter of the two bills today. So I felt like the average Oregonian at the table, indeed. I asked a lot of questions. I'm a youngish homeowner, youngish. At the time, I was an expectant mom. Now I'm a new mom. And although I do have a personal and professional interest in waste reduction, my inspiration was really getting married. Macy's, we registered at Macy's, and every single thing we got was a box wrapped in plastic within a box, wrapped in plastic wrap within a box. I am not kidding you. I actually spent hours after my wedding figuring out what to do with the boxes. Your committee administrator moved her house with some of my boxes. I dropped off all the plastic wrap at an auto parts wholesaler in Portland. And it took a lot of work to get rid of all of that waste that literally filled my guest room after I got married. My dad has 16 brothers and sisters, so that's why I had so much stuff. But, true story. So I was the one on the group that needed a tutor and asked a lot of questions about just sort of everyday, an everyday understanding of waste reduction. And I just wanted to say how it was nice that the whole committee appreciated having somebody that didn't understand the acronyms, didn't know what a tipping fee was to begin with. And I came away really supportive of the work group effort and of Senate Bills 245 and 263. There were some questions about that process. And let me tell you, I mean, I attended something like 10 meetings in the course of a year, had numerous sit-down conversations with both DEQ staff and other people at the workgroup table. I mean, it was an exhaustive process, and it's exactly the sort of thing we want our state agencies to do, to think about 2050, plan for that. It was really great to be a part of that process, and I just wanted to thank them for including me. I also just want to say that as a layman who believes in the materials management work of DEQ, I support the increased fees. We want to avoid cuts to programs that do great work, support local efforts, and it's been great hearing the local support today as well, and bring this work into the future so that we can make less waste and continue to do the best we can with the waste we have. So thank you very much for hearing from just an average Oregonian today, somebody who wasn't an expert and came away with a greater understanding of the process.
Thank you.
I'll be really brief. Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Randy Tucker, representing Metro. I'm your legislative affairs manager for Metro, and after that, I'll just make my testimony very brief because it's not going to be nearly as interesting. however, I just want to make sure that we're on the record. As you know, that Metro is the regional government for the Portland metropolitan region, and we have a major responsibility within the region's solid waste system. We have both a very strong interest in activity related to solid waste policy, and we also own and operate two transfer stations that accept garbage. Basically, the region's solid waste system, the cities and local governments franchise the haulers that come to people's homes and pick up the garbage and recycling, and the garbage then comes to a facility that we either own and operate or that we license and regulate. So we're very involved in the region's solid waste system. And in that role, we participated actively in the process that DEQ went through. We would like to, first of all, let me say for the record, we support Senate Bills 245 and 263.
The quick version.
Yeah, right. I guess I could end right there. I just wanted to commend the department for the inclusiveness of their effort and the diligence with which they undertook it. We were involved not only in the development of the legislation, but also in the development of the underlying 2050 vision that you've already heard about today. And we believe that the new goals for our region are achievable. They appropriately raise the bar for waste prevention and recycling, and they'll help to focus recycling efforts where there's really an opportunity to achieve improved environmental outcomes. And we certainly intend to collaborate with the local governments in our region and with the department and all solid waste and recycling stakeholders to make this effort successful. I have submitted written testimony for the record that is longer and more organized. That's all I need to say, I think, right now, unless you have any questions. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Willie?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Willie Tiffany with the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association, and unlike my good friend to the left, I am a not whatsoever young lobbyist anymore, so unfortunately. ORA has not taken a formal position yet on either of these bills because we're waiting to see the -1 amendments. However, we have been working extensively with DEQ on the bill, and we have some ideas that we think future amendments could actually improve these bills and express some concerns that our industry has in moving forward. So I'd like to outline those for you, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Here, and again, we did not have the advantage of being able to draft something in advance, in particular because we want to support certain provisions of the draft one amendments and work with DEQ within their structure in terms of moving these pieces of legislation forward. So with that, one of the first concerns we have, and you
which bill are we on?
We're on 263, excuse me. I'll go through the same order, Senate Bill 263, and then get into the budget bill. You heard Mr. Alloway at the department talk about the requirement. The bill 263 does mandate multifamily recycling collection service. This is a particularly, I guess for the record, I must say before stating our concern, that is a very laudable goal. Our membership is working hard on that issue, and will continue to work hard on that issue with DEQ. However, that segment of the population is a very, very difficult segment of our population to achieve results. And that's not for any particular malicious reasons, but apartment complexes in particular tend to have absentee ownership. Certain ones tend to lack on-site managers. Certain problems arise at multifamily facilities that make it difficult to enact those programs. So our position would be at this point, or proposal I should say at this point, would be to eliminate that mandated requirement and instead allow us to continue to work with DEQ on expanded programs to help bring those folks into the fold. Having said that, I do want to recognize that there are lots of multifamily complex owners that are very responsible and do a really great job with recycling. The trick is getting that last percentage of folks that are really, really difficult to make that service available and meaningful for the tenants of the property. The second one, Ms. Retton from LLC touched on, and that's the voluntary element. So again, in Mr. Alloway's testimony, one of his 5 points about what the 263 does, it changes the nature of the local recovery rates from a more regulatory process to a more voluntary process. I think you probably heard in the testimony before me the term aspirational. We've asked the department that maybe what we should do to clarify that issue, since aspirational is not in the statute, or not in the proposed bill, excuse me, nor in statute. The term voluntary is a more well understood term, and if the goals are particularly designed to be voluntary, we would seek an amendment that would insert that language right in that section. I believe it would be Section 7 of the Dash 1 amendments, but I can clarify that at some later point in time once we have a chance to review those amendments. And again, hopefully that would not have a policy impact, but you know, our fear is the same fear that Ms. Retton expressed, that you may have certain folks that are basing regulatory decisions and regulatory actions on a goal that's intended to be voluntary or aspirational. And so we just want to make sure it's very clear as we move into this 2050 kind of goal setting process that the recovery rates, it's clarified that the recovery rates are set and on a voluntary basis. Moving forward, Ms. Retton also mentioned the 2% credit issue. This is a real important program for our membership. We think it provides incentives for local governments to go above and beyond kind of the regular types of hard recycling programs into the more kind of public education and outreach programs, and it provides that incentive through the goal process. If the goals are indeed to be voluntary, we understand the rationale by which the department has proposed to eliminate the 2% credit program. However, we would seek other ways to continue to provide that incentive so that local governments could continue to have a reason to go above and beyond and institute those programs. We have been working with DEQ on what's called the Opportunity to Recycle form. It's a complicated issue. We don't need to change it in statute, but I think we've come to a pretty tacit agreement, at least at the outset here, on a way to revise that form that will help our members better express our recycling programs at the local level. And then secondly, we'd have a proposal that's not in the form of an amendment yet, but that would actually be an amendment to Senate Bill 245 that would provide a monetary incentive to those local governments. And in this case, we would be targeting the small communities, those small communities that would implement what were previously considered 2% type credit programs, a preference in the local grant issuing process. So much like any other kind of preference, DEQ would be allowed to write into rule, or at least directed through that amendment in 245, to write into rule a preference or the ability to enact a rulemaking to design that preference for small communities that go above and beyond. The next issue that we have a slight concern with is the commodity goals, what we are considering the commodity goals. So this is the new goal set for food waste, plastics, and carpet to be implemented by 2020. Our concern here is in particular for carpet, because that's a really difficult substance to recover. On the West Coast, unfortunately, we don't have access to a market that is anywhere near the ability to make the transportation costs of that recovery work. And there's no recovery facility that we know of anyway planned on the horizon. However, we applaud the department in moving forward in terms of working towards programs to recover those materials. So our suggestion on that one in particular would be just to move the date back to the original date that was proposed to the work group, which was 2025. We just think it's a real short time frame from the enacting of this bill, which would take place in 2016, to go ahead and have a market in place to recover carpet in particular. We would propose to move that date back for all three. Food waste is difficult to measure. Plastics, on the other hand, could be achievable, and there's no reason why we shouldn't try to achieve it, that goal, as quickly as possible. Our thought is to give those more difficult commodities a little more time to develop the markets and put those in place to recover those or meet those goals. We suggest the committee consider Ms. Retton's second idea, which was on the recovery rate setting process. I applaud the department in their extraordinary effort this summer to go reach out to the 36 counties, or actually the 35 waste sheds we have in the state of Oregon, largely counties, but some are combined. And one is uncombined, actually, so that's how we get to 35 instead of 36. That process was largely arbitrary, and I don't mean that in a malicious way. I mean, it was just different between counties. Some involved extensive processes with elected officials, including county commission vote, and some were basically, you know, it's just smaller stakeholder meetings with particular interest groups or county staff or city staff. We support LOC's assertion that locally elected officials should be involved in that process, and we don't have a particular method that we would suggest. We would just suggest an amendment be added that would require DEQ to set up some sort of standardized process when revising the recovery goals that involve locally elected officials. And then lastly, and hopefully the easiest one to achieve on Senate Bill 263 would revolve around the proposed Section 9, and we applaud DEQ here, largely on our concerns. They attempted to address this issue of including the recovery of energy in terms of calculating the recovery of materials, so now it's based on pure tonnage. We would suggest that that's a good addition to the calculation of the recovery rate. We would just ask that that section be clarified to make sure it includes the recovery of energy from landfill facilities and the ability for folks to receive credit for changing over their fleets to CNG, for example, from diesel and other types of programs like that. On Senate Bill 245, Mr. Chair, there are a lot of financial issues involved with raising the tipping fee, and I'm largely not going to try to address those. There's lots of ways and means types of issues about which positions go where and what those positions will do. However, we think there are two pretty major policy issues that could be addressed here in Senate Bill 245. Before getting into the nuts and bolts of how those resources will be developed and spent across the next couple of biennia. First of all, one of those issues, I think Ms. Boderas talked about the permit fee versus the tipping fee. The department is in, proposing an increase in both. One is largely a legislative process, and one is a Environmental Quality Commission process, that being the permit fee. Today, the permit fee, and the reason there's such a large ask basically for an increase in the permit fee is because those programs, and those are fees on our industry and others, and are largely paid for, and the services provided are mostly enforcement, permit writing, technical assistance, those types of programs that are directly tied to the permittee, either the landfill owner, the hauler operator, local governments that operate these facilities. We agree that a fee-for-service model is the way to go. We suggest there's no general fund in this program. It's always been kind of a fee-for-service type of program. The last few years, however, since there's been a massive decline in tonnages at landfills, thereby the tipping fee has not been able to keep up with providing adequate resources. So the tipping fee has been used to subsidize the permit fee program. And what we would be asking for is establishing within Senate Bill 245 a mechanism that requires permit fee programs to pay for permit fee programs. Senate Bill 245 describes the nature of those programs, and that tipping fees, which Senate Bill 245 also describes, the uses for the tipping fee, that we make sure that those fees are paid and utilized to pay for the programs in the tipping fee side of the program. So thereby basically setting up kind of a firewall from the permit program to the tipping fee program, so one's not subsidizing the other on a sustained basis. We understand there's some implementation issues with that, and we're happy to work with the DEQ on making sure that, you know, you probably can't make those adjustments overnight. They might have to be implemented over time to make sure FTEs are aligned up in both of those programs. But over time, we'd like to see to make sure that those permit fees that are paid by permittees are utilized in the permit program, and in the tip fees that are paid for by disposal of waste, solid waste, go to those programs that are designed to address those issues. And then lastly, I believe that Ms. Bedaris also mentioned a new fee on several, the implementation of a new fee in several areas, construction debris, compost facilities, waste tires. She also mentioned alternative daily cover. This is a program where landfill owners will take a substance, largely, most cases, an inert type of substance that would otherwise be disposed of, but can be used, if appropriately treated, as cover for landfill facilities in lieu of the landfill owner having to go buy some kind of cover to meet their regulatory requirements. So we think it's a pretty good incentive over time that this type of material has been exempted from the tipping fee because it's not really disposed of. It's reused. It's reused and recovered, or recovered and then reused, excuse me. And so we think the exemption for that type of material should remain in place. And with that, Mr. Chair, those are the concerns that we wanted to outline to you today. And again, we'd be happy to work with any and all the stakeholders and the department on addressing those issues, and would be hopeful some types of amendments could be brought forward for your consideration. Thanks, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I do have some questions, but
I do too. So how are you going to start?
We'll start at the end and work backward in my notes, I guess. The alternative daily cover, that exemption should remain in place. This isn't my bailiwick. I don't. So could you explain to me?
Happy to.
Regular people.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Non-technical language, right. What that is.
So a landfill could have a variety of substances in it, and so each landfill is kind of unique unto its own self, depending on the types of materials that arrive there, whether they be hazardous waste, construction debris, largely residential, solid waste, could be a host of different materials. And for to meet regulatory requirements, the owner of that landfill is required to cover that material as the landfill is being developed over time to deal with noise, odor, hazardous leachate sort of issues that could occur, contain those so they can be contained and then moved or dealt with right there on site. So certain materials that would be considered disposed of materials in certain areas of the state, largely sand, glass, different kind of inert materials can be converted into cover to be used for the purpose of containing the regulated issues that the landfill is dealing with. A landfill could, in lieu of doing that, they could dispose of that material and go out and buy some kind of manufactured type of cover. You may have seen at a landfill, if you visited one, a plastic-looking cover that goes over some of the units within those facilities. Our thought is that if the landfill owner can be incented to convert some of that material, which would otherwise be disposed of, into a beneficial use, which would be this cover requirement without having to go out and purchase additional material to provide that cover, that's a good thing, and that that exemption should remain in place.
Are you suggesting this for any type of landfill or just certain types of landfills? I'm thinking of methane capture, and I'm thinking, okay, if you're just dumping sand on top of a bunch of decomposing garbage, you're not, I'm just wondering, like, could you still do methane capture? And again, this is way outside of my area of expertise. But.
Mr. Chair, what we would propose is not changing the law that's in place today. And those issues are highly regulated depending on the types of landfill and the types of material that you're taking. So what our proposal would be is to keep the requirements that exist today in place.
Mr. Chair, can I just follow up on this? So, Willie, I understand, I think, the concept. I'm guess not appreciating is that by using what's already on site, and since your example, the sand that's going to stay in the landfill and it's going to be qualified to be the cover, isn't that incentive enough so they don't have to go out and buy something new and bring onto the site?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Brzezinski, it has to be treated material. It has to be converted into a substance that would qualify as a cover. So if it qualified as a cover today, it wouldn't be, it would be sold as a product. So what we're, the way that program works is you work with the entity that's providing that material to get that material in shape so that it can qualify for the designated use that you're trying to utilize it for.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I guess I'm going to want some follow-up on this, either from Lily or from DEQ or both, because my understanding is that if you have dirt that's on the property, that in itself can be used as a cover. And I don't know if it has, I guess I'm trying to figure out what treatment does the dirt have to go through, or if it was sand, if it meets the threshold of its material, understand there's thicknesses that have to be met to give that cover. But to me, I'm not understanding what they're going through to get this material approved as a cover, because it, I mean, from my days of working with a recycling organization, that's my understanding is how this works. Now, maybe it's changed.
Mr. Chair and Senator Brzezinski, I'd be more than happy to contact our members that work in the landfill arena and provide the committee with that technical information.
Okay. I would like that type of follow-up as well from both
just back to the
your
committee.
Organization and the department.
Yeah.
I had the other question I had is you said you asserted that the fees from I can't remember if it was the tipping fees or subsidizing the permitting program or the other way around is that do you know that, and I'll preface my question, do you know that or you suspect that? And the reason I ask is because a couple of legislative sessions ago there were some folks from the business community that were very concerned that fees in some areas of the DEQ were subsidizing other areas. And so I facilitated a sit down and they really poured through an explanation with the director and with staff. And by the end of the legislative session, they said, we're pretty satisfied with the answers we got and no need to address this. So I'm just asking that. Have you asked to look into the books, so to speak, or are you suspicious?
Well, that's two different questions. To answer your first question, the second one is yes, but no. No, actually, DEQ brought this issue to our attention. So since we're largely responsible in terms of working with our local governments to get rates approved to meet the fee increases that are proposed here. It's our industry that collects curbside recycling and solid waste. We own and operate landfills. We operate and own transfer stations. So, we were asking for quite a bit more detail on the budget request from the department than most of the other stakeholders. And DEQ brought this issue to our attention. So, I would rely on DEQ to talk with or inform the committee about how they would address that issue, but we have brought this concept to DEQ as well, so I don't think either of these issues are a mystery either to DEQ, certainly not a mystery to us. If there's a misclarification of that, I apologize, and we will definitely inform the committee and correct our testimony on that arena. I think the philosophical issue for us is if Senate Bill 245 is going to go through the process of defining the appropriate uses for both permit fees and tipping fees as it goes through this process of increasing the tipping fee, then our thought would be that's great as long as we ensure that those uses are funded or those appropriate designated uses are funded out of those two separate funding resources.
Got it. Thank you for the clarification.
Sure.
That was helpful. Yeah,
Mr. Chair, Willie, I just want to follow up on a couple of things. I guess in reading the letter that you gave for 245, at the last paragraph on the first page, it says something to the effect that this additional, they're talking about the increase from 37 cents from 81 cents to $1.18. Let me just first ask, does your organization oppose the increase, just the increase, not what it's used for, to accommodate the their losses right now or what they were trying to
right
recover?
Mr. Chair and Senator Brzezinski, We have not taken a position on that issue at this point in time. The tipping fee issue, we believe, needs further clarification on the specific budgetary uses of the proposed fund. The permit fee, we understand a little bit better in terms of it's a fee-for-service program to provide the services that permittees utilize with the department. So we kind of expressed that. Again, we have not taken a formal position on either of those bills. We just wanted to clarify kind of our feelings on some of those issues as we attempt to move forward on obtaining some potential amendments to help our industry get closer to feeling more comfortable with these pieces of legislation.
All right, if I can follow up.
Yep.
So my understanding, Willie, again, from your testimony, is that the association itself was at the table, was part of this, and of these various suggestions and concerns that your association, your members have taken, were any of these or all of these actually raised during the work group in the sense of these are concerns my association has or whoever was sitting in for the association? I'm just wondering if this was on, if these were on the table or not.
Mr. Chair and Senator Prozonsky, we have raised pretty consistently these concerns with the exception of the ADC issue. I will admit to the committee that that's a relatively newer issue to us. It's kind of a probably not of major concern to most of the stakeholders that aren't involved with landfill operations and how landfills work, granted, but that was brought to DEQ's attention a little bit later in the process. But we did bring that to DEQ's attention. Most of the other issues should be pretty familiar with folks in the stakeholder process. And yes, we were actively participants and raised certain issues in the stakeholder process.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask another question about just a comment on that. Well, it just sounds to me, and I appreciate that the association was at the table. I'm glad they were. I'm glad they participated. But in the end, it turned out that maybe some of the concerns and issues that y'all wanted to go your way didn't go that way based on what the work group came up with, is my assumption. So you don't really need to respond to that. Then I think the last thing I do want to ask is about the variance of the use of the tipping fee versus the use of the permit fee. My understanding from talking to DEQ this morning and looking at the fact sheet that they provided that was up on the screen, the permit fee is actually addressed by rule where all the parties who have any interest in it get to come in when there's a potential change in the fee by rule and put in their comment. And I understand that there's no sideboards on that, and the DEQ through its process rulemaking could actually have a very significant increase in that fee. And what I guess I'm trying to make certain I understand is if the association got its way as to limiting money that comes in under the permit fee versus the money that comes in under the tipping fee being used exclusively for those, it would seem to me that the tipping fee would also probably, and you want it to do it by rule, then it seems to me you're not going to have the sideboards that I see right now, which my quick, rough estimate shows that if it's capped at 3%, it would be a little bit over potentially 3 cents per every 2 years that it could be increased, where when we look at what has happened since 1994 to what is the proposal now is 37 cents, 21 years, and over that span, that would be a little less than 2 cents per year increase. So I'm really wondering if the association has looked at the tipping fee, if you really want the structure as the permit fee to have it open, it seems to me there's going to be less control and less certainty, I guess, for your members than having these sideboards that have been brought forward. And it just seems to me that if you're really wanting to go there, knowing that right now, as you stated in the letter, tipping fees are collected from the ratepayers currently pay for recycling-related programs, which I assume are part of the permit fees, then that means if we're going to do a true adjustment to say only tipping fees can be used for tipping fee services and only permit fees can be used for permit fees, you're going to see a radical change as to what those costs are, and I think you're going to see a more significant increase to your association. Am I missing something on that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Prozonsky, 2 points. I'd like to address that issue. First of all, the rationale as to why the tipping fee increase has not been increased over this 20-year period largely exists because the economy in Oregon was so successful during that time period that disposal tonnage went up significantly over that same time period. So although the fees did not increase, the revenue captured increased significantly. DEQ didn't see a decrease in that until the recent recession in 2008, and that's why we find ourselves here, is not because of the 20-year time period, it's because of the recession in 2008. Secondly, we would not be proposing to change the 3% or CPI escalator in the tip fee side or changing the legislative authority to approve a tipping fee increase. We would also not be suggesting to change DEQ's rulemaking authority or EQC's authority over setting the permit fee increase. In fact, we think if the permit fee program includes a structure by which permit fee programs or permit fees are limited to permit fee programs, EQC is the appropriate place to be effective enough to make those types of adjustments if inflationary issues arise or other issues arise as to why those permit programs are not being funded successfully. We agree with the fee-for-service model so that permittees should be paying for the full freight for the services that are provided for them in maintaining that regulatory permit. So we think it's actually more protective to include that the proposal that we've laid out such that you don't have either a subsidy from one side of the program to the other, and then a proposal comes forward like this one where you have an almost 100% increase being proposed to the EQC because of subsidies and foregone inflation. We'd rather see that the EQC manage that on a more kind of regular basis so that those impacts can be dealt with on a more modest level instead of one big type of level.
Thank you.
I do have one. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Willie, thanks for those clarifications. They helped. And thanks, Senator Brzozinski, for asking most of my questions. just one follow-up, though, again, about the use of the fees. And this is, you know, I'm looking at the sentence in your written testimony having to do with the tipping fee, where it says that ORA questions the use of this funding mechanism to significantly increase and fund waste prevention and reuse programs. So I'm just wondering what exactly is being questioned. Is what's being questioned the use of the fees to fund waste prevention and reuse, or is it to significantly increase that? And if, you know, if it's the former, how do you think that those reuse and waste prevention programs should be funded?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dimbrough, excellent questions. Thank you. Again, ORA hasn't taken a formal position. We just wanted to put our thoughts out there for you with respect to the issue of fees on disposal being utilized to pay for waste prevention programs seem like a difficult nexus, much like you're funding programs out of a solid waste disposal fee, which will be reduced over time by the implementation of those programs. So we actually support the piece of the legislation that talks about seeking alternative ways to fund the program because it's, if successful, the use of the tipping fee may not be sustainable to fund the types of programs that the department is proposing. So, you know, what we would propose that we don't have a specific proposal today to answer your question. We do know that the stakeholders and the department recognize that issue as well, and we want to continue to work with them on that. We wanted to highlight that issue for policymakers, however. As the tipping fee increases and continues to increase over time, it's maybe difficult to utilize that source as a sustainable source to pay for the types of programs that DEQ envisions using that fee for.
I have a follow-up. So some of your members are paid to manage landfills, right? I mean, is that a fair assertion? I'm just trying to understand the money flow in the industry better. And what I'm wondering is if the root of your concern is whether or not DEQ tipping fees paid to reduce waste ultimately pays to reduce some of your members' bottom line because they're paid by tonnage or that's stored in the landfill.
Mr. Chair, actually, you and Senator Dimrow are paying those fees, not the landfill owners and operators. So it's the customers that the haulers collect the solid waste from. We pass those fees right on through with the blessing of local government, of course. And local government designs the type of programs, collection programs, that we're going to have. But largely, we pass these programs through to the ratepayer. So our concerns largely lie with, is this a sustainable program for the ratepayers to continue to pay these costs for these types of programs?
Sure. Thank you. Any questions? Okay. This has been an interesting hearing.
Thank you very much.
And it'll be a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be.
These two will never come up with me.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you each for being here. Doesn't look like we have any more people that are signed up to testify. Just scanning. I don't see anybody jumping out of the chair that wants to testify. So we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bills 245 and 263 and adjourn the committee. And adjourn the committee.